Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millers and Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine, 518-789-3440, millersandvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief veterinarian at the Millers and Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning, Jill.
All right, straight into the, whatever we want to call it. Luke in Pine Plains. Last time I gave my dog her monthly dose of heartworm meds and Frontline, there was some intermittent vomiting for a couple of days afterwards. The issue resolved itself, and I'm not even sure it was connected, but I can't think of what else it would be. Do you have any thoughts? Zelda is a 6-year-old border collie mix.
I do have some thoughts. I would say, I usually say that if you have any side effects, potential side effects, or any symptoms that are associated with your giving either one of those medications, so flea and tick control or heartworm medication, that you should definitely call and we talk about what we would do next. And the first thing I do is separate the two medications next month. Frontline is given monthly, I believe. The heartworm medication, I would ask which one that is, only because Zelda is a border collie mix. So border collies, we have to be careful about collies with ivermectin in HeartGuard, although do we really need to be careful? So I guess some of the border collies have a gene that makes it difficult, a gene mutation that makes it difficult for them to clear ivermectin. Now, the amount of the ivermectin in HeartGuard is so tiny that most dogs can get away with it. But I would always advise someone, if they have a border collie or a collie or a collie mix, any kind of collie mix of any kind, that if they're having some sort of a reaction with HeartGuard, then just switch over and use Interceptor, different kind of heartworm prevention. Because Interceptor doesn't have ivermectin in it, and it works just as well. So that would be my first thought. But if they've been using this heart, if it is HeartGuard, if they've been using it for years and years, probably it's just a coincidence. So the first thing you do is separate the medication. If you've been giving your heartworm medication on the first of the month, then go ahead and give it with some food next month, and don't give the Frontline for 3 or 4 days so we can see if there's any reaction to the heartworm medication. And then you'd apply the Frontline and see the same. Sort of do this little experiment with your pet. If they're much sicker than that, I would go with, let's try something different. And it also depends on whether this is the first time you've tried those particular medications. Doesn't sound like it.
It doesn't sound like it. It sounds like he's been burbling along. And it's funny, I'm not the veterinarian, but the first thing that stuck out of me is, hey, just try, okay, see if you give it to Zelda, break up the dosage. But what I mean by that is break it up. But
yeah, spread them apart a little bit, yeah, which is what we recommend at the very beginning is, if you don't know what's causing the problem, then it's more difficult to weed out what to do. So when we start with puppies, we have people give the heartworm medication, and then 3 or 4 days later, we use the Bravecto or Credelio.
All right.
So that we can see how a response to each.
Yeah. And, I think not only excellent, but common sense advice, and then just be alert to take it from there, because our Do dogs, how sometimes people just suddenly wake up with allergies or issues? Do dogs do that?
Well, I think that...
the better question is there an accumulation, an aggregation?
I think you can develop a hypersensitivity to probably maybe not the medication. I think it would be more likely that it would be the vehicle, which is the crumbly stuff that the heartworm pill is in. And, I doubt that if Zelda's been on, if this is HeartGuard and not Interceptor, I doubt that it is a problem with the ivermectin. It's very would be very unusual.
Right. All right, Beth and Andy in Lexington, Massachusetts. We recently took our cat in for a routine checkup, and while we were there, the vet tech kind of messed with our heads. She asked us what we were feeding him, and we told her we give him wet food plus freeze-dried chicken treats. First of all, she said, well, I hope the chicken treats are very occasional. Secondly, she told us wet food was okay for the first 6 months, and after that you should give cats kibble to keep their teeth clean. We both always thought kibble was bad, especially for male cats, and what's so bad about freeze-dried chicken that it has to be very occasional?
So this is a good question. I think that the way they were feeding was absolutely right on. It's okay to give a little bit of freeze-dried chicken as long as it's not. I would only buy the freeze-dried chicken made in this country, excuse me, because we've had problems in the past, especially with Chinese-made freeze-dried meat. So if you're getting freeze-dried treats that are made in this country, then fine to do. I prefer always to have cats on canned food. More water, the better, to prevent some urinary issues. This veterinary technician may have either been very inexperienced or, maybe working for someone who isn't watching, listening what they're doing, or someone from the Dark Ages. So I think that...
When were the Dark Ages?
Not too many treats in general for cats. Excuse me. We do tend to overdo it. And the freeze-dried chicken is fine. You know, if you're doing little tiny bits and you're doing five or six of them a day and your cat's not obese, then go with canned food and go with grain-free canned food for cats.
All right. And is that grain-free canned food for cats is do they have – This is. I'm sorry. I'm ignorant because my grain free dog stuff is being activated. But is the grain free for cats? Fine. You wouldn't recommend it. But B, is that common? Is most wet canned food grain free?
You know, it doesn't have to be grain free cat food. But if you have if you have a cat with obesity problems or inflammatory problems, then I usually recommend that, number one, you have to go with a grain-free, but then you have to look for a grain-free that doesn't have lots of starch in it. So that's a whole other, it's just a whole other question. But I guess I wanted to say that, in general, the grain-free diets, which are somewhat taboo now for dogs, it's okay to use a grain-free diet with cats. The important thing is a good quality canned food diet so that they're getting more more water. The other thing that was brought up here is the whole eating dry food helps the teeth. That is proven to be false, even though I preached it myself. I thought it was true 20 years ago. It's proven to be false. The dry foods actually tend to be higher in carbohydrates. They form this kind of pasty, sticky mess that sits on the teeth and doesn't clear as well. So they may be actually worse for teeth than canned food.
All right. And then this is a complete aside, but it just happened 3 weeks ago. And it happened in Portland, Oregon. And there were these people feeding their cat some sort of reasonably specialty formulated food that they got online, as many people do. Anyway, the cat got suddenly blocked. A female cat, just she couldn't urinate. And it was quite a vet bill, and it was quite an issue. And the cat, we are happy to report, I'm very happy to report, is survived in flying colors. The pet food company concomitantly sent out a thing saying, we think we might have a contaminated batch. And the pet's owner checked their batch, and sure enough, it was part of the batch lot that they had mentioned. And this is the part that really got me. They instantly turned around and paid the massive vet bill. And I'm just wondering, and it was a massive vet bill.
So it's interesting that a female can get blocked. So if you're going to have a urinary obstruction in a female, you've got to have a stone. stone involved.
This is why this is the reason that I am mentioning it, simply because, you know, they thought they were feeding this, you know, perfectly fancy food. I'm wondering what could be, you know, without getting crazy, is there something? This is sort of tangential to the grain thing. It's like, what would create that problem so quickly in a female cat?
Yeah, there isn't anything that would cause urinary obstruction. It's possible that this cat may have had a ureteral obstruction and been very sick.
Right.
So the ureter, and that's from a kidney stone.
Okay.
So kidney stone into the ureter blocks up one kidney from emptying into the bladder. It's super painful, and it blows up like a balloon and needs a lot of intervention.
Yep.
The urethra, which is the tube from the urinary bladder to the outside, is quite large in diameter compared to the male, in the female cat compared to the male. And so it's difficult to, even with spasming, they get irritated and they pee on top of the counter and they pee in the fireplace and in the bathtub. But it's unusual, very unusual for a female cat to become obstructed in the urethra, because it needs to have a bladder stone to do that. So even a kidney stone is too small, usually, to block up the urethra.
All right.
So this may have been going on for some time. Maybe there was a different food fed previously. Maybe there were stones, and then. So I don't know.
Yeah, no,
I'm
was
not
just,
sure.
It
I
was
think
just
that
I. The thing that mostly caught my attention was they were so quick to pay the bill. I mean, usually.
Well, I think that is avoiding. You know.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure it is. I just was, as I said, I'm curious. Usually you can get, very, very, very little acknowledgement of.
I agree.
And
I
so
agree.
That stuck out most of all. And that's the real reason that I said, hey, is there something that you can, like, you know, okay, if you put a little bit of blank in it, does this instantly do that? But apparently the answer
is
no.
Nothing I can think of.
All right, Patty in Torrington. My granddaughter told me I shouldn't be giving my cat tuna as a treat. She says it has too much magnesium in it. Is that true?
So here we are right along the same lines of the blocked cat. Many cats have, there are two types of stones that can accumulate in the kidneys and the bladder. And one of them is calcium oxalates, which I guess are pretty common in people. And the other is magnesium ammonium phosphate. And those stones are made up of those three ingredients. And there are many other factors that lead to the formation of or stones or grit. Sometimes it's just kind of a gritty junk on the bottom of the bladder. And magnesium crystals tend to form stones. So if you get a magnesium ammonium phosphate crystals, and they're often called struvite, then, you know, the thinking is make a diet low in magnesium and you can help with that. That is true to a certain extent. We also need diets that are going to promote drinking. And so it's a one piece of the puzzle. So what I would say is if you have a cat who's never had a urinary problem before and you're feeding canned food, that a little bit of tuna here and there probably is not going to be a problem.
All right. So once again, it has to
do with...
Once
a week.
Okay.
No.
this is good advice from my dad, who is never able to do something once a week. Is this true of? Are we basically talking about human tuna from a can, or are we talking about tuna cat food, or both?
So I think that if my cat has never had a problem with urinary problems. So that means urinating inappropriately, in inappropriate places, straining in the litter pan, never had what some veterinarians and people would call a urinary tract infection, then I see no problem with feeding cat food that has tuna in it. If you're going to give tuna out of the can, number one, that's a lot of mercury to take on a regular basis, presumably. And so you want to switch around cat foods as best you can. And if you're going to give tuna fish, you're not going to eat it more than once a week, I hope. Then you go ahead and give your cat a little bit of it. It's okay, as long as they've never had any urinary problems.
Okay. I think that's, we can manage that. Most people who have, you know, too many things going on can simply manage, like, all right, once a week, a teeny bit, if you do, okay, as long
as
there's no
problem.
And
if you've had urinary problems, or even if you haven't had it diagnosed and your cat pees in the closet, then I would completely stay away from it.
Even clearer. All right, Marnie in New York City. The other day, me and my dog both got really hot on a walk. When we got home, she started pantsing with her mouth closed. I've never seen a dog do that before, and I was worried she was going to have a seizure. What was happening? Were you there?
So panting, so just kind of, I think that what Marnie means is that she was breathing heavily, I would guess. So an increased respiratory effort is what I would call it, because the definition of panting is with the mouth wide open and the tongue hanging out.
Right.
So, you know, that's always a worrisome issue. So, you know, if your dog is calm, maybe the dog was still hot. It's possible. And so just taking some time to cool off. If your dog's calm, and rested, you shouldn't see this increased respiratory effort. And what I mean is, you can see the abdomen actually expanding when your dog is trying to pull in air, dog or cat, and that can happen with all kinds of disease processes. One of them would be, of course, having some fluid in the lungs, which might make that happen. So. You know, if this is a regular thing, or I would definitely have a thermometer on hand if you have a fairly young dog who's super active and you're not worried about heart problem, then, you know, have a thermometer on hand, digital rectal thermometer, so that you can take his temperature when that, or her temperature when that starts.
And what should the temperature be? And what?
Well, if you have a dog who's just been on a hot walk, it could be up as high as 103, but if it's over that, I would call your vet.
Okay, and that's another good, again, gets easier. For people who've never taken a dog's temperature, though, is there any advice or any, you know, can you do it on the ear or anything, or do you have to?
No, you have to do the rectal temperature, and you want to use a, I think a digital thermometer, because it's a lot so much quicker and safer. It won't break.
Right.
And, you can use a little Vaseline on the end of it to smooth things out there, and just be careful that you don't get bitten.
Right, exactly.
So I usually, you know, if you can have someone, I try to hold the tail up, but don't crank it up. Don't ever crank that tail. That's really bothersome. So hold it up so you can see what you're doing, and then if you have a helper, have the helper give a good rub right around the ears or around the neck or around the butt, and distraction.
Right.
Because they really don't, you know, they don't mind it too much if they're distracted.
Right, but if somebody just turns around and sort of shoves it, as people tend to do, have been known to do, they turn around and there's like, hey, I can stop that.
So, right, and you just go slowly and it works well.
Right. Okay, Dave and Sharon, any issue with giving a dog an over-the-counter wormer if you are not 100% sure they definitely have worms?
That's a little bit of a trick question. Most of the over-counter wormers are safe, but I don't know for sure if all of them are. And so I'm not sure why one would give it if they're not sure that they have worms. Maybe with weight loss.
Prophylactically, so, let's just say, or something, you know, it's worm seed. I don't know, but I do know that... back in the dark ages, you know, worms just were something to be avoided.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just pretend it's prophylactic for the sake of this question.
Yeah. So if you're doing it prophylactically because you've seen your dog eat a rabbit or eat rodents or whatever, or eat a lot of poop, then it just has to be, you know, it would have to be something broad spectrum. And so it totally depends on what you're treating. So if you treat with something that has just one thing in it, it might not kill what you're after.
What is an over-the-counter? I'm just now trying to skitter 200,000 years back, and I can't remember getting a wormer from that wasn't.
I'm sure they have something at Tractor Supply.
I got
you.
Okay.
You can give. You have to question whether the dose is high enough for what you're treating. You know, it's all about. It's all about know what you're treating and know what your symptoms are being caused by. So if you've got a 10-year-old dog who has lost a lot of weight and you're going to go ahead and give them a over-the-counter dewormer, you can make them very sick because the weight loss might be from liver disease, and now you're giving something in a dose that may not be appropriate to a dog who isn't going to be able to metabolize it and will make the liver issue worse. So you see how this question could be, there are so many caveats.
Right.
With it. If you've got a young, healthy dog and you've seen worms come out in the poop, those are usually the little short ones are tapeworms. So praziquantel is the only thing that's probably going to take care of that. Many of these over-the-counter wormers don't have that, so you want to make sure that what you have going is, you know, what you're deworming for is actually going to work. Otherwise, it's a waste of your money. If your dog has tapeworms, they could have it, or your cat has tapeworms, they could have it because they're eating rodents, in which case you probably want something to cover them for roundworms as well. So a little bit of know-how and a stool sample to check for those parasites and the parasite eggs goes a long way.
Right, and I guess the only thing that I'm going to throw out is, and I learned this weirdly, is somebody once got this was a New York price, but nevertheless, it was the stool sample was so expensive that mm-hmm. I actually see why they didn't want it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't, you know, I never know if cost is an object, but is that supposed to be like crazy high, or is there a reasonable amount that you would spend? Do you know what I'm saying? I'm trying to be diplomatic.
Yeah, I don't know, because it depends on what your overhead is, right?
Sure.
So if you're in New York City, I don't know what they're going to charge to do a stool sample. You have to send it out or do it in-house or just package it up and send it out to the lab, which is the best way to do it because a high-speed centrifuge is used.
Right, but before you spend XYZ on an over-the-counter wormer, does it balance out? Are you not better off to do that?
To do which? A stool sample?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the more information you have, when you're talking about medicine, the more information you have to target what you're dealing with or to not, then the better off you are. So if your dog has diarrhea, there are many, many, many other reasons for them to have diarrhea aside from worms. So, you know, as a scientist and a practitioner, I want to always, as best I can, know what I'm treating.
Right. Okay.
Before I give a drug.
Right. And obviously the same holds true if it's your dog or cat.
Absolutely.
Just because
it's
easy.
Well, you can take responsibility for yourself, but you shouldn't be giving your dog things that might make them sick.
So basically from an owner's perspective or from a pet parent's perspective, in the same way that you would do with a kid, find out what it is first. More knowledge than not is always going to help you with the decision-making process. And
mm-hmm.
I know that sort
of... Yeah, the dangerous thing is to make assumptions.
Right.
Because you can go down that road for 2 months making assumptions, and your dog is dying, you know, as you are doing that, because you haven't addressed what the problem is.
Right. And I'll just go and say one thing, just as someone who's had dogs and cats for a while, is that, you know, and even new people figure this out fairly soon. Unfortunately, it's not like being able to ask your 4 or 5 year old, my throat hurts. You know, they can't tell you that, but they do a few things that are outside the norm that tell you that it's not a regular day. And so it's easy enough to figure out that you might have something going. It's most of the time it's totally inconsequential, but it's sure worth asking, no?
Yes.
Okay. I'm glad you agree with me. Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon. This has been Pet Files. Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. Who let the dogs out? Who?